One of the things that we want to let you know about, as Cindy was finishing her story there, she was talking about Uganda, and we are actually going back to Uganda, and we just found out. We work with this organization called Restore. It's run by an individual named Bob Goff. How many of you are aware of Bob Goff? He actually came and spoke here at Hoboken Grace a couple years ago, and he's become kind of a big deal since then, and he does amazing things all over the world, and he runs this organization called Restore, and his whole thing is being able to love. Like, when you see an opportunity to love, take it, and really whimsically loving people. And so the whole organization kind of works that way. So we knew we were going to Uganda, we just didn't know when, and we kept asking them, like, when are we going? When are we going? When are we going? And so last week we found out we're going September 5th. Which is, I know, it's like 6 weeks away, but that's the way Bob works, that's the way Restore works, and it's amazing the impact that they make. But you have an opportunity to go to Uganda September 5th through the 13th, I believe. And I know a lot of you are like, man, that's really short notice. But let me tell you something, if you can do it, you should do it. Because the impact that Restore has in Uganda is unbelievable. And for those who've been on the trip before, they can tell you it is life-changing. It's life-changing for the people that you're impacting, the people that you're loving, the people that you're caring for. It's life-changing for you. And to be able to see how God is working and moving in people's lives over there, it's incredibly, incredibly powerful. And so I know it's short notice, but if you have the chance to go, go. If you're interested in that, you can stop by any of our connection points. You'll see them out in the hallway marked by the big orange signs, and they can get you connected with the right people to get you signed up for that trip, or even just to get you more information. You're like, I just need to know more. At least find out the information about the trip. And for those of you who are with us for the first time, let me just take a second to introduce myself. My name is Chris. I'm the lead pastor here at Hoboken Grace, and you've walked into a series called In the Meantime. And for the past few weeks, and we do these things called series, where it's basically 4 to 6 weeks where we're diving into a specific passage or diving into a specific truth about who God is, and or something God's teaching us about who we are and how we relate to Him. And for the last couple of weeks, what we've been walking through is this series called In the Meantime, and we're looking at this question: what do you do when there's nothing you can do? What do you do when you're in a situation or a circumstance and you're just stuck? You're stuck. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you seem to try. All the options are bad. And so you thought that you were going to spend the rest of your life with this person, and you thought that your relationship situation was locked up for the rest of your life, but then something happened, and that's not going to be a reality anymore. What do you do when there's nothing you can do? And there's nothing you can do to change it. There's nothing that you can do. What do you do when you looked at your life and you thought that this is what your career was going to be, and you thought you were going to go to this school and you were going to get this job, but then something happened and you're never going to get into that school? Never, ever, ever. And it doesn't matter how many times you write, and it doesn't matter how many times you show up at the dean's office, it doesn't matter how many things you do, you're never going to medical school. What do you do when there's nothing you can do? You're in a relationship, and you're not going to get divorced, but he's not changing, or she's not changing, and you're just realizing, okay, this is going to be my reality for a long time. The doctor calls, and it's not going to kill you, but you realize that your life is just going to be different forever. What do you do when there's nothing you can do? And when you're in that, and what we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks, and if you haven't watched, or if you haven't been here with us, I highly encourage you to go back and watch the previous 2 weeks, because they're really foundational. Because we've kind of been building an answer here as we look at what God says and looking at how different people have engaged this with God throughout history, and looking through the scriptures and seeing how God is telling us these stories of these individuals, or these individuals are sharing with us their stories. And one of the things that we realize from the beginning is that at the core of this, there's a lie that when you're in the midst of adversity, when you're in the midst of one of those in the meantime circumstances, that God's abandoned you, that God is absent, that God doesn't care anymore, that God's apathetic, that God is angry. For some of us, we spend huge chunks of our week thinking through our lives and like, God, why is this happening? I mean, what did I do wrong? Where did I go wrong? What did I... And we think that God's angry. But as we look through the scriptures, we begin to see that even for those that Jesus was closest to, there was adversity. And that there seems to be no correlation or connection between God's love for us and the absence of adversity or the presence of adversity. It seems that even for those that God was closest to, even for those that God cared deeply about, there was still those in the meantime circumstances. Last week we looked at the life of Paul and this reality that not only had Paul found himself in the midst of an in-the-meantime circumstance, this thorn in his flesh, this physical situation that would not go away, but the reality that as he asked God to take it away, God said no. The reality that sometimes in our lives God's going to say yes, and sometimes he's going to say no. But he says no with a purpose. He says no with a promise. That his grace is going to be sufficient for us in the midst of it. That he's going to use it, that his power is going to work in it and through it. And so we've been building this foundation as we ask this question. And maybe you're not in one of those circumstances now, but all of us have been. And the reality is we're probably going to find ourselves in another one at some point in the future, one of these in the meantime circumstances. And it's crucial for us to realize that, listen, he's not absent. He's not apathetic. He's not angry. And that even when God says no, that he does so with this promise and with purpose. And he's stepping into our lives and saying, listen, my grace is going to be able to walk you through this. And we looked at how Paul is experiencing that. And not, he's not just teaching us about it. He's actually experiencing it. He said, this is my story. This is my reality. This is my life. And I'm in the midst of this in the meantime circumstance. But I'm experiencing his grace. I'm experiencing his power. I'm actually seeing the purpose of it, how God's using it in my life. And he's helping us to be able to understand and wrestle through our own situation. And as we walked out of last week, really the challenge was just that, to wrestle. That as you're in the midst of this, rather than running from God, rather than saying, you know, I don't want anything to do with you, or rather than simply becoming an acquaintance with God and having this surface level relationship where we're not really going to talk about anything real, we're not really going to, it's just kind of this fairy tale relationship and there's this facade, but rather than becoming an acquaintance with God, that we would actually, even in the midst of the in-the-meantime situation, draw close to God and to really wrestle through this with him. And to ask the hard questions, not to bury them, but to ask them. And to ask him to speak into them in our lives. And the thing that was really encouraging for me is that as we came out of last week, I think a lot of you have begun to do that. And I heard a lot of really great stories. And I think the thing that was most encouraging is that for many of us, maybe for the first time, we're beginning to take down the facade when it comes to God. And rather than just the answers that we think we're supposed to give, we're actually beginning to interact with him as we really are. Which takes a tremendous amount of faith in his grace. And so we're beginning to wrestle. And as we said last week, this isn't something that's going to change in a day. This isn't something that's going to change in a week. What Paul is talking about that he's experienced in God, this is a journey of him wrestling with God. I mean, even in the passage last week, he said, for three times I asked God to take it away. He says, I've been in these three seasons where I've really wrestled through this with God. It's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen in a week. It's not like you're going to learn a phrase. And sometimes I think we're like that. We buy into kind of the spiritual diet pill mentality. You know what I mean by that? And so we just want to be able to learn a bumper sticker that will change our lives. And it seems that it's changed other people's lives because they put it on the back of their car. So obviously it must be somewhat meaningful to them, and they want us to know about it. And we buy into this idea that there's just going to be this one phrase that I'm going to learn. And as soon as I learn that phrase, then all of my life is going to change. But that's not the reality that we live in, especially when it comes to conversations like this. There is no spiritual diet pill that you just, oh, you know, I learned this and now everything changed. No, this is deeply part of our relationship with God. And like any other relationship, it takes time and engaging him over and over and over again in the midst of it. And the reality, the application step of this entire series, and we've got a couple more weeks where we're going to be walking through this. The application step of the entire series was what we talked about last week. That you need to wrestle and engage God in a real conversation about what's really happening. Trusting him, holding on to that promise, holding on to that promise that his grace is going to be sufficient. Trusting him to work in it and through it. But as you're wrestling, what we want to do for the next few weeks is that we just want to speak into that conversation. We're not going to be able to resolve the conversation. I'm not going to be able to resolve the conversation today. This is going to be an ongoing conversation between us and God, but I want to speak some things into it. And for the next couple of weeks, we want to speak some things into it to help you have the conversation better and to give the conversation a little bit of context. Because I think sometimes as we're wrestling with God, because of the fact that we don't understand the context, we can actually be wrestling in the wrong arena. And we're having a conversation with God that he's not necessarily having back with us because our questions are coming from the wrong context. And so what I want to do for the next couple of weeks is just to be able to help define the context and for you to be able to understand God, what God's doing a little bit better so that it can inform your conversation and your wrestling match with him. And the great thing about this, again, is that throughout the New Testament, we find so many people who are in these in-the-meantime situations. And over again, these writers are talking about their own in-the-meantime situations to be able to help the people that they're writing to interact with theirs. Because almost everyone, when you look at the New Testament, and I think we miss this often, and it's really important. It's really important. We talk about different things that we need to grab a hold of if we're going to understand God's word. One of the things that you really need to grab a hold of when you come to the New Testament is that their lives were not like our lives. And I don't just mean because they lived thousands and thousands of years ago. I mean, when you look at the New Testament, it's really important for us to understand. The New Testament are the books of the Bible that are written after Christ's life, so from Matthew on, right? When you look at those books, most of them are written to people who are in horrendous, in the meantime, circumstances. I mean, really difficult circumstances. Not all of them, but most of the books are being written to people who are either in or are on the brink of incredible persecution. For most of the people who received these letters, if they hadn't already experienced it themselves, they knew of individuals who had died for Christ, who had been put to death because of the fact that they believed in Jesus Christ. This was their reality. For some of them, the reality was that they were reading these letters in secret because if people found out about it, they were going to be beaten and they were going to be publicly humiliated and they were going to be put in prison, if not killed. And so one of the reasons that the writers talk about their in-the-meantime circumstances so much is because they're writing to a group of people who are in very difficult situations. And they're looking at what's happening, and they're like, what? And they're trying to figure out how to deal with this and cope with it and how to, and so that's why it's really almost a theme of the entire New Testament of, okay, what do you do? And what do we do with the pain? And what do we do? And so over and over again, these writers are talking to this, and there's so much that we learn as they share their circumstances. They share the result of their wrestling matches and their experiences with God as they're encountering these in the meantime circumstances. So what I want to do for the next couple of weeks, and what we're going to do is we're just going to hit on a couple of these passages where they're sharing their story, and they're just speaking into ours and allow it to inform our conversation. It's not going to resolve it, but it will give context to it. So I want to take you to one. It's found in Colossians chapter 1, beginning of verse 24. And Paul's talking about some of the ways that in the meantime circumstances in his life. In Colossians chapter 1, verse 24, he starts off, he says this. He says, "I'm glad when I suffer for you in my body, for I am participating in the sufferings of Christ that continue for his body, the church." And this is the same individual that we looked at last week who was talking about the thorn in his flesh, and he's talking about how he's suffering this way. And then he's writing to the Colossians, and he begins to talk to them again about this, about his in the meantime circumstances. And for Paul, it was more than just the thorn in the flesh. I mean, sometimes I'll listen to people talk about following Christ, and they'll say, following Christ, you're going to get rich, you're going to and all these different things that you're going to have. And then I open up the scriptures, and I look at the life of Paul, and I'm like, Paul, you really blew it, bud. Like, what happened to you? Because Paul didn't get rich, and he didn't get, and his life was just crazy. I mean, he's constantly in jail. He actually gets stoned to death, and Christ brings him back to life. You know what it means to be stoned to death? Right? This isn't like a Colorado thing, all right? This is like they literally pick up giant stones. They would put an individual in a pit, and they would pick up giant stones and throw them down until they died. It is one of the most awful things. And then the scriptures say Paul was stoned to death, and Jesus brings him back to life. Now, here's the deal. Right? If you read it at surface level, you're like, oh, great, he came back to life. If I got stoned to death, I don't want to come back to life. You're like, no, 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 no. I'm done with this. I mean, Paul lived unbelievable in the meantime circumstances and situations. And last week, he's talking about how he's discovered this promise, or God has told him about this promise of his grace being sufficient, and how he's going to redeem these situations and give them purpose. But then as he's talking to the church in the book of Colossians, he mentions another thing. And he says this. He says, I'm encountering these things. He says, but I'm glad when I suffer for you in my body. And again, going back to his other conversation last week, I don't think that what he's saying is, you know what, I would choose this. I don't think that what he's saying is, you know what, I look forward to this, or man, I can't wait for this to happen next week. I don't think that he's saying that. But what he's saying is, okay, as you're in these in the meantime circumstances, as I've been in these in the meantime circumstances, my perspective has changed. At the end of the passage last week, he said, my perspective has changed because I'm experiencing the promise and I'm beginning to see the purpose. And so my perspective has changed. And rather than it being all bad, rather than it being all negative, rather than it poisoning the rest of my life and robbing me of all joy and happiness, he says, no, I've begun to be able to see these things differently. And so rather than running from them, now I actually, as he said last week, I boast about them. I embrace them because I know that I'm going to experience God in them, even though they're unbelievably difficult and hard. And then he comes to this. He says, and then also, he says, I've seen another good thing in it. He says, I'm glad when I suffer for you in my body. He says, for I am participating in the sufferings of Christ that continue for his body. Now, this line has so much for us because there are so many lies. There are so many lies that we believe about God that this line confronts. Especially when you're in one of those in the meantime circumstances, because when you're in the midst of incredible pain, when you're in the midst of incredible pain, one of the things that happens is you begin to, because of the fact that, again, remember, we believe that God's absent. we begin to believe that God is divorced from the situation and that he is just bringing pain into our lives, but it doesn't actually affect or impact him. And so it's kind of like, and we begin to form this image of this puppet master, and we're experiencing all these things, but God is absent and disconnected and not impacted or experiencing them in any way, shape, or form. This verse in particular, and really throughout the scriptures, there's so many things that speak to this. But in this verse particular, Paul speaks to this and says, no, you need to understand something about the sufferings that you go through and that I go through, and that is this, that Christ is not divorced from them. And oftentimes when we talk about how Christ has suffered for us, we talk about it as if it were a singular moment or event. So we talk about the cross. And look at how Christ has suffered for you. And we talk about how he goes to the cross and how he gives his life for us. And it is the most intense moment of suffering by Christ in order to bring us back to him. But make no mistake about it, and Paul wants to make sure we don't miss it, this is not the only moment of suffering by Christ for his church. Because the reality is that from the very beginning, Christ has been suffering. From the very beginning, the Father has been suffering for his church. You see, from the moment that Adam and Eve walked out of that relationship with him, from the moment that God saw Cain kill Abel, there was unbelievable suffering that God endured. And one of the realities that Paul is calling them to is this. No. It's not just that God's not absent, but you need to understand this. God is experiencing the same suffering that you're experiencing. And the pain that you're experiencing, God's experiencing that pain too. You see, the reality is that God has been suffering through all of it. And it's an unbelievable suffering. It's one thing, I think most of us can connect to this. It's one thing to experience suffering yourself. It's another thing to watch suffering in someone that you love. It's almost a greater pain. As a matter of fact, as we were talking through this past week, and I was in the midst of a couple different conversations with people, they said, you know what, it's not so much about the pain that I experience that I struggle with God. It's the pain that I watch the people that I love experience, and I can't handle that pain, and I'm angry with God about that pain. And what Paul's trying to call us to and help us understand is this, that God has been in the midst of that from the very beginning, and that every single bit of that pain that's experienced around the brokenness of the world, God experiences that. And he has been enduring that suffering. It wasn't just the cross. The cross was the most intense of those moments, but it has been going on from the very beginning. And he says, and listen to how he said, and he said, and it's continuing now. It's continuing now. Because as God continues to allow this mission to go forward, as God continues to allow this world to spin, the truth is that he experiences unbelievable suffering. Because he can't stand watching you hurt. And he knows what you feel. See, he experiences all of it. Not just yours, not just mine. Not just this room. All of it. And Paul's calling us to this reality that God's not divorced from this. No. God has been in the midst of suffering from the very beginning. But he says it's not that he just enjoys suffering. He says no. He's been engaging suffering from the beginning, continuing to engage suffering because of the fact that he is on a mission. And so he's engaging this suffering for the church. He's on a mission to bring people back to him. And it's important for you to understand, when the New Testament talks about the church, especially when it talks about like this, it's not just talking about the people who are currently believers, it's talking about all those who will ever become believers. And so he's suffering for those who even have not yet believed. He's suffering for those who have yet to be born, you and for me. And Paul's saying, listen, one of the things that I understand is that as I'm on this journey, that Christ is enduring this unbelievable suffering of the broken world because of the fact that there's a mission, because of the fact that there are people who are going to come back to him, because of the fact that there are people who are yet to be born, and he's talking about you and for me, and he says, and so what I get to do, and one of the things that I've realized is that all the suffering, all of the pain, all of it, in all of it, I get to partner with Christ in engaging the pain for people. I get to partner with him in engaging the pain for people. There's actually a point in Paul's life where he says, you know what, I'm ready to go home. And if you were Paul, I'm telling you, you would have been ready to go home too. I mean, he just reached a point where he's kind of at the end of himself. He's like, I'm ready to go home. But as he's in the midst of the conversation, he says something interesting. He says, and truth be told, for me, it would be a lot better if I would just go home. He says, but for your sakes, I'll continue. He says, you know, sometimes I just want to check out. I just want it to be all over. He said, but I understand that God hasn't called us to just leave, but he's called us to do what he does, which is to engage the pain for people. He's called us to do what he does. God stepped into the pain for people. Listen to what it says about Jesus in Isaiah 53. It says, he was despised and rejected, a man of sorrows, acquainted with the deepest grief. God could have hit the eject button. He could have abandoned us. He could have said, you know what? You've chosen pain. You choose it on your own. You want to break this thing, you do it on your own. He could have decided to never be affected by us again. But instead, he willingly, and not just at the cross, from the very beginning, he willingly subjected himself to pain for people. Because he believed that you were worth the pain. And he believed that you were worth the pain. And he believed that you were worth the pain. He believed that you were worth the pain. You were worth the pain. You were worth the pain. So he said, I'm not going to leave them. I'm going to embrace them. And if that wasn't enough, he sends his son to literally step into the pain. And again, rather than running from it, rather than ejecting, rather than hiding from it rather than blocking it out. If there's anything that God has demonstrated to us, it's this, is that he is willing to run headfirst into the pain for us. And so he sends his son to that cross. And he watches him be nailed to that cross by the ones that he had created. He watches his body get shredded as individuals mock his son and mock him. He puts all of our sin and brokenness on his son. And his son has to experience all the shame of it, the humiliation of it. And he watches him die on that cross. Not because he had to. Not because he should. Not because it was even the right thing to do. He was justified to walk away. But he chose to engage the pain. Because he loved people. And he believed that people were worth the pain. Not that we have value in some way, shape, but he loved us to the extent that people were worth the pain. And Paul says to the Colossians, he says, I've realized something as I'm in this. And it's not just the pain where I know that it's connected to the mission. I think he's talking about all of the pain that he endures, everything. He says, I've realized that something about pain. I've realized something about these situations. He says, this is one of the ways that I get to be like Christ. This is one of the ways that I get to partner with him in the mission. And it's not just with what I say to people. It's even the fact that I'm continuing to engage the pain. And all the different things that come into my life, he says, I understand that this is how I get to partner with Christ for his church. And so as he continues, he talks about this mission and how he's engaging this mission because he's realized, you know, God's on this mission of bringing people back to himself. And ultimately, guys, don't miss this. A huge part of the mission is to end pain. For him to be able to end pain for those who are his children. And so Paul's like, I'm understanding now how God is enduring pain and how he has endured pain and continues to endure unbelievable suffering for those who don't yet know him. And so I've engaged this mission with him. It says, God has given me the responsibility of serving his church by proclaiming his entire message to you. And he begins to talk through what the message is. Listen to what he says as he gets to the end of the chapter. He says, that's why I work and struggle so hard, depending on Christ's mighty power that works within me. He says, I'm realizing that all of it, even the pain, even the fact that the pain continues, even the fact that God hasn't ended the pain, he says, all about the mission. It's all about those who have not yet heard. It's all about those who still don't know how Jesus Christ loves them. And so he says, I'm partnering with him. And I realize it's not just what I say. He says, I work hard to tell as many people as I can. He says, it's not just what I say. It's actually even the pain that I endure. That's a part of that partnership. Listen, Paul doesn't just talk about this. Peter says almost the exact same thing as he's writing in 1 Peter chapter 4. Listen to what he says, 1 Peter chapter 4, 12 through 13. It says, dear friends, don't be surprised at the fiery trials. Now, when Peter's talking about fiery trials, he's not like just using an imagery. Like he's talking to people who are in danger of dying for Christ. He says, dear friends, don't be surprised at the fiery trials you're going through as if something strange were happening to you. Instead, be very glad. He uses almost exactly the same thing. He says, for these trials make you partners with Christ in his suffering so that you will have the wonderful joy of seeing his glory when it's revealed to all the world. And when he gets to the end of that, I don't think he's saying you're going to have the joy of being able to see how amazing Christ is. I think he's talking about more than that. He's talking about the whole thing. He says, listen, guys, listen. I know you're in the meantime circumstances. And when you're in there, it's unbelievably difficult to be able to figure out, okay, God, where are you? He says, but you have to understand what Paul's trying to teach us, that this is how another way that we partner with Christ in his sufferings. And he says, one day, you're going to get to see the end of the story. One day you're going to get to see how glorious the story was and everything that Christ accomplished. One day you're going to get to see the people. One day you're going to get to see the people. And we struggle to believe that people are worth the pain. I mean, some people are. Like, for example, my kids are. But I don't know about your kids. We struggle to believe that people are worth the pain, but you have to understand something. These are God's kids. And for him, every last one of them is worth the pain. And so he invites us to partner with him. And rather than abandoning this world, to engage the mission with him. That all might know, no matter who they are, no matter where they are on the journey, that God believes that they're worth the pain and that he's endured it to bring them back to him, that one day they might be able to see what we hear in Revelation chapter 21, where he says that he will wipe away every tear from their eyes and there will be no more death or sorrow or crying or pain. All these things are gone forever. There's going to come a day when it will end. But understand the context. The context is a mission. It's a mission for people. God is on mission for people. And he invites us to partner with him in it. Not to run from the pain. Not to choose the pain or want the pain. But to understand that the pain continues. Because there are still people who don't yet know. There are still people that God is engaging the pain to bring back to him. And we get to do that with him. Will you pray with me? Father, the reality of the pain that you have endured in order for us to be here, that is for us to even be alive, let alone for us to have come to know you, it's just amazing. It's unfathomable how you've loved us in this way. And how over and over and over again you have chosen, rather than to actually be absent, to leave us behind, rather than to just destroy us, that you have chosen to engage the pain. To see people come back to you. Father, as we come together today, as we're in all of these different conversations with you about are in the meantime circumstances and situations. Father, I just pray that the context would maybe just shift a bit. And I know that this doesn't resolve things, but I know how you have used this passage in my life to just shift the context just a bit. And for me to begin to interact with you a little bit differently, that you are not immune from pain, that you are not immune from my circumstance, but that your heart breaks when my heart breaks. That you really are my dad. That you love me in that way. I just pray that the context would just shift a bit. That we take one step closer to being able to walk through these things the way that Paul did. Not fighting you about them, but walking with you in them. In Jesus' name.